Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. As strong supporters of the American Kennel Club, we talk about everything from conformation to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between. Your passion is our purpose. Tremendous thanks to our sponsor, Royal Canin. Every day, more top breeders are choosing Royal Canin. Join the winning team. Okay, crew, before we get into today's show, I am super excited to tell you about something new here at Pure Dog Talk. We know breeders are the lifeblood of our sport. We celebrate and honor our master breeders. So we're bringing you Breeders' Voice. Breeders' Voice sits down with top breeders, sharing their secrets, how they got where they are, the joys, and maybe even the heartbreaks. If you haven't had a chance, click the Don't Miss an Episode button so you'll get these in-depth articles delivered free along with your podcast. Sign up on our Facebook page or at puredogtalk.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are back with Dr. Marty Greer for the Veterinary Voice episode. Today we are talking about something that I think a lot of our listeners are going to be very interested in, because we've all probably run into this or at least heard of somebody who has, and that is cruciate ligament tears. And so we're going to talk about some prevention, some possible treatment options. And Marty, thank you for joining us. I appreciate your input on it.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. So cruciates, I've lived it. I know an awful lot of people who have. Let's talk about why those cruciate ligaments are so important and so fragile.
Okay, where do you want to start?
Well, I think let's talk about exactly what the cruciate ligament is, where it is, and why it is so functionally important for the dog.
Sure. So humans, dogs, horses, cows, everybody has a pair of cruciate ligaments. There's the cranial and caudal cruciate ligament if you're human. There's anterior and posterior, or cranial and caudal, if you're a dog. So the cranial cruciate ligament is the one that usually gives us trouble, but there are actually two cruciate ligaments inside each knee joint. The knee being the one with the kneecap, the joint that is your knee, is the joint that goes forward in the dog, and some people confuse which joint we're talking about. So the two cruciate ligaments cross inside the joint. That's where the word cruciate, or the term cruciate, comes from. Cruciate means cross, like crucifix. That's all the same word root. And so there are two ligaments that cross inside the joint, and when they're working correctly, that allows your knee joint to act as a hinge joint. So it just moves forward and back. It doesn't have any other rotation. And then there's some ligaments on the sides, collateral ligaments that hold it so that it doesn't wobble back and forth. But it takes both cruciate ligaments, both the cranial and caudal cruciate ligaments, functioning correctly to make the joint healthy and stable. If one of the ligaments tears, it's almost always the cranial ligament that tears. And what happens when that happens is a couple things. One is it's painful, so the dogs start to limp or not use the leg, carry it. And the other is that it leads to instability in the joint. So instead of the joint just acting as a hinge, it also ends up with shearing motion back and forth, so that the tibia and the femur shear across each other and there's not stability. And then that starts to damage the meniscal cartilages inside the joint, so then you end up with meniscal damage and meniscal tears. So it's compounded. It's not just painful, but it's also unstable. And then a secondary damage starts to develop, and then that leads to arthritis.
Right. And so what types of things will cause the cruciate ligament to tear or to strain or to be injured at some level?
There's a lot about that we still don't fully understand. When we were in school, I graduated 36 years ago, we were taught that it was primarily trauma that caused the cruciate to rupture, that a dog would be running and catch its foot in a hole, and as they were moving forward, their momentum would then tear the ligament. But since that time, cruciate ruptures have escalated in incidence just astronomically. You know, we used to see, an occasional cruciate here and there. But now, almost any dog that comes into our practice that's limping on a back leg is suspect to being cruciate ruptures. Sometimes it's hip dysplasia. Most of the time, it's a cruciate ligament. And our clients already know that. They've already gone online, they've already Googled it, and they already know that we're going to come in the room and tell them that their dog's torn their cruciate ligament. One of the contributing factors, and we don't understand completely what the incidence is going to be, But there's a huge increase in incidence of cruciate ruptures in dogs that are spayed and neutered when they're young. And because there's been a big movement to early spay and neuter from the rescue organizations and the humane societies, for reasons of population control, they've put our dogs at increased risk. Inadvertently, they didn't set out to do that, but inadvertently they've set our dogs up for failure in the development of their joints. So when a dog is spayed or neutered when they're really young, their growth plates stay open longer. We know that from llamas. We know that from human eunuchs that, you know, the young boys that were castrated when they were really young back in the European countries so that they could continue to sing in the choirs. The eunuchs grew tall, longer body, longer legs, longer limbs. And the same thing happens with our dogs. So if you walk down the aisle at a humane society and you see a long-legged, skinny, straight-kneed, black, 60-pound dog, odds are pretty good that it's a male that was neutered when he was 3, 4, 5 weeks old, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 months old. But we do know that the incidence is much, much increased in dogs that are spayed and neutered really early. So that's one factor that really needs to be taken into account. Now, that doesn't mean that every dog with a cruciate rupture is spayed or neutered. We certainly do see some athletic dogs, some of the field trial dogs and so forth, that come into the practice that have had true trauma to their joint and has caused that ligament to damage and rupture. But we know that spaying and neutering has a big impact. There's going to be an article that's coming out fairly soon that shows in golden retrievers, the incidence of cruciate rupture is 4 times what it is if they're spayed and neutered young than if they're not. So fourfold the incidence, it's huge. And I don't think it's just going to be golden retrievers. I think that's just the first study that's going to be coming to the literature. But I'm sure over the next few years, we're going to see a huge number of supporting documents that suggest that that happens in more breeds than we know. And it's almost always the larger breed dogs, the 40, 50, 60-pound dogs and up that have cruciate ruptures. It's usually not the smaller dogs.
Right. Okay, so early spay-neuter, this can be a problem. Trauma, this can be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
When I was speaking to Dr. Gerald Bell, which that episode was released before this one, he made some reference to a genetic basis for cruciate problems.
Mm-hmm.
Can we expand on that at all? Are we talking about just genetically the dogs are not structurally sound, or are we talking about actual ligament development problems?
Well, I'm not sure we really have a great handle on that yet. I know UW-Wisconsin was looking at Labradors to try and get normal dogs over the age of 8 and dogs with cruciate ruptures in to compare them genetically, looking for if there's a genetic basis for it. Some of our breeds, we have inadvertently bred them to be really straight through the stifle. So, you know, if you look at most breed standards, they should have good angulation front and back. You know, those are kind of the words that you see in breed standards. But if you look at the dogs, if you look at Chows, Rottweilers, all sizes of poodles, it doesn't matter if you're talking standard miniature or toy. If you look at how they stand when they're in a stack, they tend to be pretty straight through the stifle. Their hip is straight above their knee, is right above their hock, is right above their foot. So you don't see that nice angulation that would be ideal in a lot of breeds. So I think that we have structurally developed dogs that look like we want them to look, and inadvertently, by doing so, have created dogs that are more straight genetically. So there is certainly a genetic basis to it when we have that. And when we see any kind of disease that we can say has a breed predisposition, then that certainly has a genetic component. Now, that's not to say that all breeds can't potentially rupture their cruciates, because they all can. There's also an increased risk of cruciate rupture if they're dogs with patellar luxation. And certainly patellar luxations are one of the things that OFA allows us to register our dogs to be normal or abnormal in their patellar configuration. But if the dogs have patellar luxation, and again, those are the toy breeds, the poodles, the straight-legged dogs, but we can see it in any breed. I saw it in a German short hair pointer that's a very athletic dog a couple of weeks ago. So any dog that has a predisposition to have patellar luxation will also be predisposed to cruciate rupture. Beyond that, we don't really know if there's something else going on or not, but about 50% of dogs that rupture one cruciate within 12 months period of time will rupture the other one as well. So that leads you to believe that there's either an environmental or genetic cause for that. And what could be environmental? Well, it could be that they're overweight. It could be the age that they were spayed or neutered. It could be a lot of different things. So I don't think we have a great handle on it. We certainly don't have a DNA test yet that can say, oh yes, this dog is likely to have a cruciate rupture. I would encourage people that when they're looking for a dog to breed to, if I have to hold a stud dog up to collect his semen so we can do an AI because he just had cruciate surgery. Maybe he's not the dog you should have in your gene pool. Maybe that's not something that you want to introduce into your line of dogs if you haven't had problems with it before. And I do actually have people that come in and say that. Well, he just had his knee done, so could you help him breed her? Because I don't want him to hurt it. I'm like, oh, sure, but maybe we should step outside the room for a moment and have a conversation about
maybe we should think about
the ideal dog.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Because I don't want to dish your stud dog, but on the other hand, I'm worried that this might be a genetic problem.
Wow.
So we don't have a DNA test at this point. Will we ever? Probably, but I think there's a lot of environmental pieces that we need to work on first. We also don't see all cruciate ruptures being equal. Some dogs will start to stretch their cruciate ligament, or it'll start to fray a little bit. The cruciate ligament is actually kind of two ligaments all in one. One is a very tight band that runs down the center, and then the other part of it kind of fans out on both ends where it attaches to the bone. So we can see some dogs that fray it, that start to tear it. Some of those dogs with rest and with anti-inflammatories, we can get things quieted back down and they may be okay. But many of them go on to have a full rupture. So it can either snap, just, you know, walking down the street with your dog on a leash, you can hear it. And actually have had clients come in and say, I heard it rupture. So you can sometimes hear it just snap, and sometimes it'll slowly over the course of time fray and deteriorate and then tear all the way through. So I don't think there's only one kind of cruciate disease, and I think we kind of lump them all together because we don't have the resources at this point to really sort out what the different types are. Obesity, being out of condition, those kinds of things are certainly contributing factors to any kind of joint injury. And it's questionable, I mean, could something like Lyme disease that sets up inflammation in the joints, is there some other inflammatory disease process going on in these dogs' joints that predispose them to cruciate ruptures? And at this point, we don't have all the answers for it. It'll be a while, I think, before we do, but people are certainly looking. And the surgeons are very happy because they get to do lots of expensive surgeries on our dogs. So unfortunately, when a dog does have a cruciate rupture, unless they're pretty elderly, they are going to be subject to a fairly expensive surgery or potentially two surgeries if they're that 50% of the dogs that rupture the second side.
Right. So that is the segue I was headed for. So prevention, I don't know that we have much prevention except for don't spay them when they're babies and don't let them get fat and sloppy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would really talk hard about this, the spay and neuter piece, because a lot of veterinarians are still fighting us on that, and they're still very convinced that everything should be spayed and spayed and neutered young. And for a lot of reasons, I think early spay and neuter is really hazardous to our dog, individual dog health. For a population control situation, I understand that. If I ran a humane society, I would feel the same, but I don't. I'm in private practice. I get to treat individual dogs, and individual dogs, the owners need to be counseled on what the appropriate age to spay and neuter would be. And this is only one of the reasons, but a very important reason, because we're talking sometimes $3,000 and $4,000 per knee to fix them. So pretty quickly, a dog that you spayed young or neutered young can end up to be an $8,000 dog.
Right. And we have talked on other episodes about cancer risks that come with early spay neuter and all of that. So definitely part of the process. So in the treatment category, you talked about surgery. You also spoke a little bit, and I think we could go back to this just for a little bit, about the dogs who have had partial tears or a stretched or a frayed. And so can we talk about a treatment protocol for those dogs? Because I have personally encountered those, and that's something that I think is a lot for a new owner to understand. No, I mean, it really can't go run around.
Yeah, you really do need to keep them rested, not fat and out of shape, but rested. Try to come up with some activities that are safer. Maybe go see someone that specializes in physical therapy for dogs. Do some underwater work. Do some non-weight-bearing kinds of work so that you can keep the dog fit. Increasingly, there's numbers of places with underwater treadmills and swimming pools for dogs. In fact, in the small town that I live in, we're only 15 minutes away from one, and we're an hour away from four pools. So there's opportunities there. When the weather's nice, of course, you can use swimming in the outdoor world. But here in Wisconsin, when you have to break through the ice to go swimming, it's not much fun for the dog or for us. So we tend to avoid that. We tend to go inside. So underwater treadmills, working in the pool, good physical therapy. Braces, I don't think, and splints have not really been proven to be highly effective in preventing the ongoing damage to the joint. I would certainly use an appropriate diet, and there are several really good prescription diets on the market that are meant to reduce inflammation in joints. Hills makes one called JD, There's a Mobility made by Purina, Royal Canin makes one. So there's a couple of really good prescription diets that have high fatty acid contents and anti-inflammatory components to them that reduce inflammation in the joint. They tend to have a little glucosamine in them, but they don't have adequate levels of glucosamine and chondroitin to protect the joint. So I would be looking at a supplement. And our favorite one is Dasaquin, one of those made by Cosamine, made by the Nutramax company. They're one of the few companies that actually has supporting evidence that says that their product has in it what it says it has in it. Because they're nutraceuticals and not drugs, the FDA doesn't oversee them. So we do see a lot of variability in efficacy and product quality. If you're looking for an inexpensive version of it, you're probably not going to successfully find a good quality, inexpensive version. So plan on spending a little bit of money and getting a good one, but getting one that has some research behind it. But those are the things that you can do to reduce inflammation. There's also been some discussion about doxycycline being anti-inflammatory in the joint. So not only does it treat Lyme disease, anaplasmosis, and Ehrlichia, which all can contribute to joint inflammation, all three of those are tick-borne diseases that are checked for on a lot of the tick panels that we do in practice, especially if you're in Minnesota, Wisconsin, the Northeast, where Lyme, you know, Connecticut and those areas are. So a lot of dogs are being tested for those. So I would look at having the dog tested for those diseases, the tick-borne diseases, and if there's any question at all, a three-week course of doxycycline is generally pretty safe. Now, I don't do it on every dog, but if there's any question about the dog carrying a tick-borne disease, I would try the dog on a course of doxycycline to try and reduce inflammation in the joint. So those are the things that we can really do, is just to protect the dog from overexertion and to try and keep the dog in good physical condition and protect that joint until it can have a chance to heal.
Right. And how long typically is it going to take them to heal that type of an injury where they haven't actually ruptured the ligament, but they've injured it?
It can take several months.
Okay.
So if you've got an active dog that's involved in hunting, of course, it's always going to be at the wrong time of the year. It's going to be during hunting season. If you've got a dog you're competing with, of course, it's going to be right after you sent your entries in. You know, I understand those things, but you have to look at the long-term benefits for the dog, and that's reduced risk of really significant arthritis if the dog goes on to have a full cruciate tear and you're unable to completely manage it surgically. And even with surgery, the best surgery, whether it's a TTA or a TPLO, depending on the surgeon that you talk to, those are both very, very good surgeries for the cruciate. Even that will be back about 90% of their full capacity.
Okay. So TPLO is the one I've heard. Say the other one again, because I'm not as familiar with that one.
Sure. The other one is a TTA. It's similar to a TPLO. They're both procedures that they go in and take a section of the tibia, cut that off, reposition it, and then change the angles in the joint with some hardware. So it's similar TPLO, just depending on surgeon preference. Some do TTAs, some do TPLOs. The procedures that are considered to be the most effective for the athletic dog or the dog over 50 pounds. The smaller dogs, they still do a fair number of what are called tightrope or securos or fishing line. There's a couple of other terms for those. And those, they just go and clean up the joint and tighten it up, but they don't try to reposition some of the bone and change the angles of the joint like they do in the TTA and the TPLO. So it depends on your dog. It depends on your budget. It depends on your surgeon. And it depends on what your activity levels are expected to be when you're trying to plan for what the procedure that's best for your dog. And it's not an emergency surgery. So if it happens on Saturday night, you don't have to have the emergency clinic do the procedure on Sunday. This is something that you should take your dog home, put them on anti-inflammatory medications, and do some research on who the best surgeons in your community are. And I really encourage people to go to a board-certified surgeon for their needs to be done. It's a big deal, especially in a performance dog. So what we recommend in our practice is that a board-certified surgeon does the surgical procedure on the dog. This should be somebody that does multiple cruciates a day, a week, not somebody that does a couple of them a month. I like to have board-certified surgeons doing these procedures. The outcome is much better. There's a couple of different procedures. I had a surgeon that recently came in, and we had a dog that had just a real mess in her knee. She spent 3 hours cleaning up the knee, and that's something that's beyond the scope of what many local veterinarians are going to do. So take your time, talk to people, and find out how you find the best surgeon. Spending a little extra money on the front end and getting a good surgery done the first time is really valuable. If the procedure goes badly, it's very difficult for that dog to make a full recovery with even a second and third surgery. Select your surgeon carefully and do use somebody that's a really good surgeon when it comes.
I think these are some excellent tips, Marty, and I really appreciate focusing on getting a good surgeon if you do have to have treatment, focusing on not early spay and neuter, and good fitness and weight levels to help prevent it, and just the awareness that this is something that may have some level of a genetic component for our breeders.
Right. So select your genetics carefully. Even though we don't know everything there is to know yet, think hard about how you put genetics together in your gene pool.
Right. Very good. Thank you so very much, Marty. We appreciate it, and we'll look forward to talking to you on our next Veterinary Voice episode.
Thank you.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the Dog Show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Supers desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.